Now, for the main show, I'm happy to introduce Zach.
My name is Zach, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to say welcome to the newcomers, Rick, Raphael, and Brennan. Good to see you guys here. My sobriety date is January 20th of 2024. My sponsor is Nate. And my home group is the Mad Men Book Study on Wednesday evenings over at the Golden Group. I'll start off by saying I'm not originally from here. I grew up in San Diego. And, you know, as a kid, I was a straight-A student. I didn't drink. My first drink was at 18. There was always this feeling of discontent, you know, this something was lacking, and I searched for it in other ways. So I wanted to get out of the house, get away from my dad in the evening, so I joined band. That was a great thing to do, you know. I was pretty prolific in my studies, straight A student. So when I turned 18 and began looking at colleges, I applied to San Luis Obispo, right up here. And my first week there, I joined the marching band up there. Wanted to continue the drumming, and that was a big part of my life as a growing up, so I wanted to continue that. During that first week before school, all the newcomers in the drumline that year, we all got a text saying, there's a drumline party at our house, be there. To me, I was ecstatic. I was like, man, I'd heard about these parties. I didn't do any partying in high school, being a band geek and all that. I was excited. I was like, oh, fantastic. We went there, and that was my first drunk, and it was a great time. It was a great time. I finally got that feeling of feeling like myself. I wanted to feel confident, I wanted to feel attractive, I wanted to feel funny, I wanted to feel cool, I wanted all those things, and alcohol gave me that. I began to love that party scene, and I got put on academic probation during my very first quarter. I stopped going to classes, and if I had a 7 a.m. class, I showed up to 2, maybe the whole semester. So I was just wasting money, wasting time, and I was spending my evenings drinking and trying to find different women to hook up with. That was my goal. That's what I thought I needed, and that's what made me feel good. So now I was only searching for things that made me feel good. That was my constant thing, 'cause inside I was absent. I was not there. Throughout college, those first 3 years, I took 5 years instead of 4 years, mostly due to the drinking. During those first 3 years, I struggled in school. I struggled a lot. I didn't know why I was there. I didn't know what I was doing. I felt like I was wasting money. I was wasting time. I was used to being the guy in class that people would come up to and ask homework problems and, you know, what's going on. And now I was that person asking others, you know, do you want to be my group partner on this project? And people go, no, I already have someone. You know, they could see me a mile away, you know, that I was not consistent and I was not one to show up, you know. I went from a straight A student to like a straight C and D. And the quote I loved at the time was, D's get degrees. And that's what I coasted on, trying to figure it out. And then this whole time I was discontent. And then I discovered Adderall, and that was a big one. And to me, you know, it was perfect because I could drink a ton. And then when I absolutely needed to cram, I would just take Adderall and just, you know, 1 to 2 days straight, just, you know, probably focus on my homework, but more likely get a bunch of laundry and chores done that I haven't been doing. And those last 2 years, I pretty much used Adderall and drinking to get through, and I managed to graduate. I graduated in 2019, and I got a job right down here in Santa Maria, so I moved here in 2019. Right after that, so for me, it was a brand new town. I was still having trouble drinking too much. Not enough to where it was full-blown alcoholism, but it was causing problems, you know. Those days, at first it was like, you know, there were no problems, and over time it was like about 50% of the time you're going to embarrass yourself, you're going to cause problems, you're going to, and it was getting up there in those statistics, I guess. And when then COVID hit, and for me, I became very pale. I was inside all the time. I didn't go outside doing anything. I could work from home, I could game from home, and I could drink from home. So those years, my drinking from 2020 to 2022, I was drinking heavily, getting some real problems. And in 2022, and all this time, like, I had a relationship. All throughout college, I would get in relationships and they would end. I would get new social groups. You know, I was constantly moving around. You know, just as soon as they would start to figure me out, like, something's off with this guy, you know, I would switch groups, you know. And school made it easy because every 3 months, you know, you get a whole new set of classes, whole new set of people that you interact with on a day-to-day basis. So 2022, I tried to relive those days. By then, like, I was, my friends were not really reaching out. You know, they didn't really want to hang out with me anymore. I hadn't made any new friends in town. COVID kept me inside, or rather, I stayed inside. I felt I needed to stay inside. And 2022 came around, and I wanted to relive those days, those good days. And so, all day, I bought it was like sparkling ices, but the alcoholic version. Those seltzers, those alcoholic seltzers. And I bought like a 24 pack and I went through them. I lived right next to a 7-Eleven, so I'd buy Buzz Balls for there. And I had this idea like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, there's a comedy show up in SLO. That sounds fun. I need to get out, you know, do something. So, and then I was like, oh, you know, I don't like the clothes I'm wearing. I'm gonna buy all new clothes. So I went to Macy's. And I spent probably like $500 that I didn't have. All brand new clothes, drunk. I got like a ring, I got a necklace, I got new sunglasses, I got a new collared shirt. I was feeling pretty good about myself. Went to this comedy show, you know, I wanted to see sophisticated in my new outfit, so I was like drinking wine, you know. I was getting pretty drunk by that point because the jokes weren't making sense, but I would just laugh when everybody else laughed. And by then I was like, ooh, by myself, I was like, I want to go, you know, maybe to Motav or to Frog and Peach. So I went to Motav. It was a Thursday night, and I was like the only one there. And so I was like, ooh, I can get the party going, you know. I'll dance in the middle of the floor by myself, sunglasses on at like 10:30, 11 at night. And that's the last bit I remember. From then on, apparently I went and got kicked out of Frog and Peach. I got in my car. I drove up to Atascadero to get In-N-Out. I only know that because they had the receipt that said like 12:05. I had a huge scrape on my car, and I woke up on the side of the road to a cop knocking on the window. And, you know, I would have thought that would have been my reaction, you know? Like, oh, crap, I'm in some serious, you know? But by up until this point, like, life, I couldn't handle it anymore, you know. All my friends had left. I was not in any sort of relationship material. All my credit cards were maxed out. Every single credit card I had was maxed. I had maybe $20 in my checking account, maybe. And so when I was desperate. I didn't know what to do. I knew that I was going down a bad road. And so when this cop knocked on the window and I woke up and I realized, you know, I'm in some deep crap right now, the feeling that came over me was relief. Relief, because at that moment I was like, finally something I can't get myself out of. You know, I knew I was, they had me dead to rights. So I was actually in a pretty good mood, to be honest. I was joking with the cop. He asked me to do the field sobriety test, you know, and I was playfully arguing with him about marching technique. You know, that's not how you do it. And he was like this. He wrote it down in the report, like, this, argue with me about marching technique. Crazy. And then they booked me up and slow, because apparently I was in the slow city line. And, you know, I was sitting in that drunk tank with the air conditioners. It smells like piss. There's food all over the floor. It's freezing. Concrete, you know. And I was starting to go like, ooh, maybe this is some, maybe I don't like this. And so I got out. By the time they let me out, which was about noon on Friday, I got arrested at, or the cop knocked on my window about 5 in the morning. I was like, man, I got to get this drinking under control. You know, this is some serious, I'm going down a serious road here. I'm causing some real problems, you know, not just embarrassing myself or saying something I didn't mean or passing out randomly. You know, this is trouble with the law, and, you know. So I was like, I need to get this under control. So naturally, as soon as I got home, I started drinking again. And because I didn't know what else to do. I had no tools. I had no tools to deal with this. All my old plans failed. I had tried sobriety on my own. And, you know, a couple weeks, a month. The longest I got was 9 months until, you know, something made me feel like either I could drink again or I wouldn't be accepted if I didn't. And those two things, you know, I would always come back. And was I kind and nice and happy when I was sober on my own? No. I was, put it nicely, I was kind of a down in the dumps, miserable asshole. And I was not fun to be around, and I didn't like it. So the DUI freaked me out, because I was, somehow I was doing well at work, and they were sending me to Germany in July. So I got arrested in June. So walking through, my biggest fear was that either on the way there, they would grab me and pull me aside, like, you're a DUI person, you can't go on a plane. Or I was freaking out. My court docket said I do not leave the county. I talked to my lawyer, are you sure I can leave the county? He's like, oh yeah, no problem, you can do that. And I was like, are you sure? So as I walked through those TSA gates, I was expecting any minute them to come out and like, no, you're escaping or something. You're a high level criminal anyway. And Germany was an escape for a little bit. I was there for a month. And I could pretend to be someone else while I was there. You know, not the person with the problems, not the person with the DUI. There, I was the professional, interesting American that was visiting. And, you know, each night I would buy these, we call them tall boys here, but there they're just probably regular beer bottles. And I would stock up on these. I would go out, you know, evening, had drinks with every meal. I would go out to some club and I would drink there. And then when I get back to the hotel, I'd always buy a bunch of beer from the front desk to bring up to the room before sleeping. And I was and something you do there is that you, when you, because they have something called the fond, they recycle, the glass bottles are worth quite a bit. So it's customary to leave your glass bottles outside the hotel room door. And every morning I could see I was the only one with like 10 bottles outside the hotel room door, you know? And I was like, that's weird, you know, maybe they're, you know, no one else is having fun. And then, you know, it was an escape, this thing. And then, but the thing is, like, it had an end point, and I had to come back. I had to come back. And I, at that time, I hated Santa Maria. I hated this town. To me, it was, I barely saw it from my room. You know, I'd spent so much time inside, so all I'd read is news stuff. And I lived on the main road, right by the high school. And so all I saw was, anyway, I was not happy. And so coming back, you know, back to normal life was a big blow to my, to me mentally. And my drinking went from, it was bad before, but now it was, this might kill me. And I was not showering. I was not eating. I was passing out randomly. And it was horrible. I lost a lot of weight, because I couldn't afford anything. So I would try and make like salted spaghetti or butter spaghetti, and I'd pass out and wake up to it burning on the stove. And this was just no way to live. No way to live. I was looking up constantly YouTube. I was like, alcoholism. What is an alcoholic? You know, at what point do you become an addict? You know, what to do about it? I thought I was gaining all this knowledge, right? All this stuff. All these things that were going to help me. And short answer is it didn't. But I was looking for something. I was desperate. And the last thing I tried to, there was this medication that was supposed to block the opiate receptors in your brain so that when you drank, you didn't get that pleasure feeling or whatever, the dopamine, and it was supposed to help you quit. And so naturally, I tried to buy it, and my card declined. And to me, that was it, you know. I had no money. Everything was getting more expensive. I knew my drinking wasn't taking me anywhere. To me, I saw the future, and it was just more of that and worse. So I made a plan that I was going to end it on when I got my paycheck. And apparently, when I was drinking this whole time, obviously, but I was calling people, calling my brothers, calling my family, and apparently I told something that scared them, probably the ending a bit. And so, you know, my brother, like, you know, canceled work, and he drove up on Thursday to come see me, and he stayed the night with me, just one night, and then he drove back to San Diego, and then my parents drove up on a Friday, and that was November 5th, 2022, and, you know, they were sleeping in my bedroom, I was on the couch, and I was going through withdrawals on the couch. It was horrible. And, you know, they had to see me like that. My parents who love and care about me, and they want, you know, this. Anyway, scared them. Really, really scared them. I did that to them. And they gave me the suggestion that the only one I hadn't heard of or thought of, and that was why you should go to an AA meeting. So, and it hit me like a truck. I was like, that's a great idea. Why didn't I think of that, obviously? You know, Alcoholics Anonymous, of course. I need to give that a try. So we looked up meetings, and we found something. It was on noon that Saturday, or noon that Sunday. It was somewhere in town, so I rode my bike because I was not driving, and tried to find it, and I couldn't find it. And I got back to the house, and I went, well, couldn't find it. Guess that didn't work. Didn't even give it a shot. To me, just going and just look, not even actually going to a meeting, to me, I gave it a real shot. And they were like, there's another one this evening. Go to another one this evening. And that was the Sunday night speaker meeting, right here in this room. And that was my very first meeting. And from there, you know, up until this point, I thought that drinking was my problem. You know, drinking was the only problem I had. You know, if I could solve the drinking thing, everything else would go great. You know, it was not the case. You know, I stopped drinking. I was going to meetings regularly, and I was still restless and discontent. I did the first three steps with a sponsor, and then I stopped because, you know, obviously I had this now. And I would come up with brilliant ideas. Like, oh, you know that girl you hooked up with? She's in South Dakota and she wants to see you. You should fly out there in December and almost get stranded, you know, 30 days in. You know, I was still filled with my own ideas of what I needed. And so I went through that first year. I only did the first three steps. I was still working on the fourth, of course. Not really. I had thought about it a lot. You know, my spots would ask, like, do you have the fourth step done? I'd be like, yeah, I have it in my head done. He's like, no, you got to write it. And I'd be like, okay, I'll finish that next week. And then eventually just stop calling him. And about 6 months in, someone said something. They gave me an idea. You know, my own self-will. They said, you know, that person's probably California sober. And I was like, what's that? And they were like, oh, you know, you don't drink, but you smoke weed. And internally, I was like, that's a great idea. That's a great idea. I'm going to start doing that, you know. I was like, I'm not sleeping very well, you know. I'll use it for sleep, right? So I bought one of those stizzies. And I would, you know, I started using it at night before I would go to sleep. But, you know, it's progressive. Everything's progressive. So, you know, then I started, you know, then I would use it as soon as I got home from work. And then it was, oh, maybe I'll run home at lunch. And, you know, well, I'm here, you know, if it's right there, why not use it? And then it was like wake, and it became everything. Of course, I didn't tell anybody about it, you know. I hadn't talked to my sponsor in months. It was suggested to me, you know, you should really work with a sponsor. And I would get questions like, when's the last time you called your sponsor? And I would go, oh, a few weeks ago. And they said, you know, you should really think about either dedicating your time to that sponsor or finding a new sponsor. So naturally I said, you know, I'll get to that. I'll get to that. And, you know, I'll get that reminder. And I finally called him up. And I went, you know, maybe, I'm sorry, you've done a great job, you know, but I really think I need to look for a new sponsor. And again, this is nothing about you, you know, this is all me. I need to work on some stuff and that, you know. And he went, I'm still your sponsor? You know, because that's... I was clearly missing something. I was smoking weed, thinking that I was sober. I was creating resentments left and right, you know, at work. People knew... My own boss knew my troubles with alcoholism. He knew I was in the program. He was very supportive. But, you know, when we talk about being free, you know, being content, you know, I was not that at all. I was not. And it started to ramp up. And for the first time, about 9 months in, for the first time, I didn't feel better after a meeting. And that was a weird thing. I was like, why am I angrier leaving, you know, angrier on the way out than on the way in? And it didn't make any sense to me. I'm sober. I'm sober, right? I'm not drinking. Why am I still having this? And I had the Zoom commitment at the Orchid meeting, at the Orchid monthly speaker meeting. And I... One month I showed up like about 5 minutes before it started, and a good friend of mine in the program was running the meeting, and he had already done it for me, and I got there and I was angry. I was like, why didn't he think I was gonna make it? You know, this is my commitment. You know, why does he think he can step on my toes? And but that thought came and those feelings came. But I knew the guy. He was a great guy. I knew. So there was this discontent there. And finally, after several more experiences like that, I got honest with my sponsor, and I told him that I had been smoking weed and had problems with lust, you know. And And he said, I'm glad you told me. We're going to, it would be my suggestion to raise your hand at the next meeting, get a new sobriety day, and start this for real. We could start working the steps for real. And so I started, and that's when things finally changed, you know. I had no idea beforehand. You know, I thought just getting sober and coming to meetings was enough, but for me it wasn't. So started working the steps for real. And step four was, you know, at first going through 1, 2, 3 again, focused more. Step four was the big scary thing to me, the big amount of work. Completed that. That was really important. Step six, character defects. Step seven, giving those defects over to God. Those were huge. Amends were scary. But with this program, with the support and your example, you know, they were doable. And going through the steps was monumental. In my experience, you don't know what you don't know, which pretty much means, like, unless you try it, you have no idea. And I tried it. And for me, you know, I've been able to stay sober since then. Happy, joyous, and free is what we desire, and I've had moments of those, a lot more than I did before. It's still trouble, life on life's terms. I still get my own ideas back sometimes, you know, thinking that, you know, but these things were super important to me. I'm in good standing at work, and I've had some interesting experiences being sober. And having done the steps. And the book tells us that as long as we're spiritually fit, we can go anywhere. And it's a short sentence, it's a short paragraph, but in practice, that's a huge deal. And that spiritual fitness is one that I struggle with. You know, that's because it's a relationship with God, and a relationship is both directions. You know, we learn by the speed of pain, or at least I do. I'm pretty sure others do too. And I make mistakes. But this program has always come through for me. You know, when I'm in fear and doubt, I reach out to the brothers, I pray, and most of the time those solve it. And if it doesn't, I just keep working at it. The biggest lie I told during that, when I first came in, was, I'm doing great, how are you doing? That was a huge thing that I told every day. And what really changed for me there is I started getting honest. How are you doing? Well, I'm struggling here, and this moment at work bothered me. This moment with my brother irks me. I felt uncomfortable in this situation. I felt great during this situation. I felt good doing this. Getting honest on a day-to-day basis, that's something that I had no idea how dishonest I was. Which was weird to say, right? I had no idea how much of a liar, white lies, that's a funny word for a lie, funny phrase for a lie, but you know, I always wanted to wear the mask, and letting that down and showing the people in these rooms and outside these rooms, you know, what was really going on has paid nothing but dividends, has been nothing but good. You know, I had this experience. My like I said before, my boss knew that I was in the program, and right before I got honest about the weed, I had overslept at work, and I woke up to him calling me, and he asked me a question. He asked me, Zach, are you still sober? And that's when it hit me that I was not sober. That smoking weed was not the answer for me. That was not sobriety. And that's when I got honest. But there was still the fear there. Like, now my boss had gone through, not one, me getting, going, starting Alcoholics Anonymous with alcohol, but now it was weed too. So I had this fear, like any day now I'm gonna get let go. Any day now, you know, I'm on a list, the short list, that if, you know, we don't make as much profit this year, you know, I'm going to be the first to go. So I would sit at my desk and I'd be working, and then my boss would say, "Hey, Zach, can you come in my office for a second?" And boom, this fear would hit. Today's the day. The hammer drops today, you know? And I would try and hide it, but my hands... One of my biggest fears was losing my job because I was afraid. I was deeply in debt. And to my mind, you know, as soon as I got fired, I would get kicked out of my house and I'd be homeless. And I didn't think I could do it. You know, I didn't think I could do homeless. So that was a huge fear for me. And one thing that really helped me early on was by talking about it and saying a little prayer every time that happened. So whenever my boss would go, "Hey, can I see you in my office?" You know, and that fear would hit, I would go, "God, please direct my thinking." You know, because before I would go in there and I'd be shaking. I'd be thinking like, when is he going to say you're fired? And it'd be like, "Can you help me with this Excel problem?" "All right, thanks. Have a good day." That was it. And I made up this huge thing in my head. Crazy. Craziness, right? And so these tools I began to use in my life. And you know, I had this massive credit card debt that I thought I would never get free from. You know, the interest was eating me alive. I wasn't saving any money. And getting honest about my finances with my sponsor, you know, we were able to go through and realize, oh, I can take out a loan against my 401k. That was always available. And I pay interest to myself. And I paid all the debt. And I asked, before I went through with it, I asked my sponsor, like, "Do you think this is a good idea? Do you think I'm ready to do this?" And he said, "As long as you continue being honest with your finances, absolutely." So this was a constant theme. I was getting honest. I was double-checking my thinking. I had done the program, now it was time to build that, to double down in the program. So I have plenty of commitments. That first meeting I went to, the Sunday night speaker meeting, I'm the secretary there these days. I have Zoom commitments. I'm the commitment chair at the Madman meeting. I have several commitments now because that's, you know, when I thought I was sober, that was the only reason why I went to meetings, was I had a commitment. And so to me, in my experience, commitments keep you coming back long enough to finally hear the message. And that was my experience. Going forward, you know, it's really just trust the process. Use the tools that have been given to you. You know, rely on God. You rely on your fellows. Stay honest. And that has not always been easy. I still get my own ideas back sometimes. But, you know, it always comes back to those things. And in my experience, if there's anything you take away from this, from me talking tonight, it would be, you know, work with a sponsor, get honest, and work the steps. That has been what worked for me. Work on that spiritual relationship with your higher power. That was a difficult process for me. It still is. But these are the tools that have been given me that gave me my life back, you know, when I was ready to end it. And that is the difference. You know, before, my bad days today are nothing like the bad days before. And I'm grateful for that. This program saved my life. It continues to keep me present. It allows me to have a higher power in my life. It allows me to have a community here and a community everywhere. And I'm grateful for that. And that's all I got. Thank you.
Great job, dude.
All right. Thanks, Zach. Let's give him another round of applause.